I think really my passion is that food and making food is a love language for me, and having Common Pantry allows me to do that in a way where I am not limited.
Welcome to Communion and Shalom.
In this podcast, we are exploring how the biblical and historic Christian faith can engage sexuality, ethnicity, culture, and our local communities as we pursue the flourishing of God's kingdom. Our goal is to engage these topics charitably and with nuance.
Welcome to another episode of Communion Shalom. Potentially, this might be our first episode with video if we publish this on YouTube at some point, but you're most likely listening to this from your regular podcast app. Today's episode, we are talking about Common Pantry, part of our series on the commons as a really important aspect of, I mean, society in general, but especially our local communities. And so I have my dear friend and special guest, Hannah Heiler, to share with us her joy with Common Pantry. Hannah, thank you for joining today.
Yes, my pleasure.
Could you, I mean, just briefly, who are you? Are you, where in the world are you from? What do you like to do outside of Common Pantry-esque things? And then you can share more about that too.
Do I have a life? Apparently I'm supposed to. Okay, yes, who am I? Well, I grew up in St. Louis, and I guess I'm a Midwesterner through and through because I had a foray into Los Angeles for a few years and found myself, hearkening back to my humble roots and landing in the cities because my sibling is here. And yeah, I guess bits about me, passionate about design and community and food. I love the arts, and yeah, I love seeing humanity in its finest come through in hospitality. The loving of a stranger. Yeah, it's, I don't know. I always struggle when people are like, so tell me about yourself. And I'm like,
I like living.
I don't have my elevator pitch down, folks.
Speaking of hospitality, are you familiar with the Eastern Orthodox icon, the Hospitality of Abraham? I'm forgetting the iconographer's name. It's a Russian one. Anyways, I was just reflecting on that today of just God's hospitality. It's about the hospitality of Abraham, and it shows like the three guests, you know, like the three angel visitors, but he's using it to reflect on, kind of flip it and have it be about the Trinity and Father, Son, and Holy Spirit inviting the humanity, inviting the gazer of the, you know, the person looking at the icon to God's table. And it's just a really wonderful icon on all centered around hospitality. So if you haven't, maybe I'll get a copy for you sometime.
Yeah, please do. Please send along.
So before we get specifically into what Common Pantry is, can you share briefly how you got into Christian community as something you really care about, and maybe define what that means for you?
Yeah, so I guess I'd have to start back in college, which is where I feel like a lot of people have their dipping their toes in the water with community. I was a part of a Christian ministry on campus, and the guys had a house called Mag House. It was on Magnolia Avenue. And when I was a freshman, there wasn't really a ladies' house associated with our ministry. And my sophomore year, there were a couple women who were spearheading getting ladies together and doing something more intentional, maybe intentional adjacent, now that I know this whole movement of intentional Christian community is like very low intentional. But we got a house together in competition with Mag House because while it was on Magnolia Avenue, their acronym was short also for Men After God. And so we named our house Doghouse, which was Daughters of God.
I think Doghouse, is that better than Wag House, you know, Woman After God?
You know, we had like one of those photos, Christmas photos, where we all were like had little dog poses. It was so cute. Anywho, that was like, I think, my first step into it. We had various levels of intentionality. I remember there was some vulnerable conversations or just attempts to have Sunday meals together. And I definitely put that into the box of college life. So I didn't necessarily intend to go down that path as a post-grad. Well, I say post-grad, that sounds like I have higher education. But I moved to the cities and lived with my sibling. And actually, that's where I'd say I got some common pantry roots, was sharing food with my sibling and doing meals together. But yeah, I discovered that I really missed living with other Christians, being able to lean on housemates spiritually, which just wasn't something that was available for my sibling or for me to do with my sibling. And so COVID plus George Floyd left this gaping hole of needing to transition to some sort of community living. And I ended up, through many indirect routes, landing at a community in Minneapolis called Genesis Community, or Genesis Communities, as it's technically, I think, filed as. Then I moved into Ecclesia, which is the house I now live in, and kind of got thrown into the whole scene of, well, it's not just Christians living together, it's Christians sharing food together and cooking together and offering hospitality together and figuring out mission together and rhythms and spirituality and prayer and just learning the sky's the limit, even considering things like sharing finances or doing foster care as a house. So definitely a deep dive and definitely no looking back for me. I don't think that I want to live outside of community again.
Yeah, it's and I am, our community house is just about a mile or so by birds flying. It's like about a mile, maybe it's a mile and a half. I can't remember now. Anyways, yeah, we're basically sister communities, sister houses. And it's been such a treat to receive from your hospitality, both yours personally and yours as a community, the great Christmas parties. And their home is a beautiful old Victorian home that...
Yep, built in the late 1800s.
Yeah, and so just like...
It's old and beautiful and massive, and they don't make homes like they used to, kind of home.
Yeah. Yeah, singing Christmas carols around a piano at a big Christmas party in an old Victorian home. It feels like I like stepped back into a movie or something. That's pretty magical. But today we are here for Common Pantry. So if that basically just means when you, I mean, I don't think either of us actually have a walk-in pantry, but when you look at the pantry of food that is available in the house, it's not all sectioned off and individualized of saying, here's Hannah's food, here's other housemates' food, but it's just the food is in common. It's a common resource. Is there anything more? I mean, so we do this at my house as well, and it's something that I had hoped for but didn't, like, plan on it being a necessary thing. We're just going to kind of figure it out. We started our community house, and I've now realized more and more how just vital I think it is for the life of a household. But anyways, on how I defined common pantry, is there any other, did I hit it? Or is there anything, how would you define it?
Yeah, I'd say it's collectively sharing food, a commitment to having certain things on hand and restocking it, and everyone chipping in and figuring out what are the things that are important to everybody and what are the things that your budget can afford. Because I'd say your budget, the fact that everyone is, for the most part, chipping in equally. I've lived out a few variations where that's not exactly true, but means that
you all have to be on somewhat of the same page about what your, I'll say, values are.
Mm-hmm.
Do you value having pre-made foods? Do you value having organic foods? Maybe I'm getting too much in the weeds.
There's so many facets to it. Why do you, you're very passionate about Common Pantry. And when you think about, you know, if you were to ever move out of where you're moving or consider different housing, I know it's a top priority of yours. Could you just share like why that is for you personally?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to go back to why you're sharing food. So a lot of people would maybe choose Common Pantry because it's actually a lot more affordable. And by that, I mean, you can regularly shop at places like Costco. And yes, I will say Restaurant Depot. and get economies of scale that you're just not going to get unless you had like lots of mega freezers. Like one freezer per person. So affordability is a reason that some people might do Common Pantry. But I would say it's actually not the reason I do Common Pantry. And maybe is also why I feel like I can be passionate about it, because it's not just nickel and diming things. Another thing that's, I guess, cool or a value for Common Pantry is food waste. I think that I didn't experience this in my house, but prior to me moving in, when the whole house shifted to Common Pantry, they threw away so many condiments and produce and like just the things that normally go bad, but now they're going bad for every single person in quantities that are much larger than they need to be, because you can't really grocery shop for one person. You're not just getting like three celery stalks and like two carrots, right? I mean, you can, but then you're paying extra for it. So food waste and the desire to consume responsibly. And then I think the third, and for sure the value for me that is the most important, is it fosters a culture of sharing. And I'd say this is like really the heart for me, why I have passion. I do love the environment. I'm all for taking care of our planet. And like, people are the bread and butter for me. And if you're doing Common Pantry, let's say you want to do like an ornate meal for your entire house, right? You want like no bars, no stops added, right? And you live in a house with eight other people. Suddenly doing that for your house becomes a couple hundred dollars. And that's because you don't have maybe the spices you're looking for, or you don't have this specific pasta that, you know, whatever it is that you're having to buy that you then also have extra of, and you're like, how am I going to use this? Or, and like another thing too, of like someone like pops into your house and you're hosting somebody for the evening or even for a week, who's paying for that? And having to like sweat those details around, I don't know what it, like, I am not someone who enjoys conflict over small potatoes like dishes, which, you know, inherently is always a point of conflict in community. It's so beautiful being able to be generous while also not being wasteful or even overly extravagant, because at the end of the day, I can do those things and it's still not a lot of money, not a lot of food waste. Everybody loves it. I think really my passion is that food and making food is a love language for me, and having Common Pantry allows me to do that in a way where I am not limited by, I'm not limited.
Hannah, you are a foodie, and it is always a joy to go to like a potluck with you and be like, oh, this is the dish that Hannah made. And in my own, oh man, I have such a like a weaker palate. Some of my living in community has been just like, oh, once a week, a common meal together. But for a lot of it, it's been common pantry. And their amount of learning I get from other people who just know more about food than I, helping me move beyond Kraft mac and cheese to homemade mac and cheese, and realizing that cheddar cheese is cheese and Kraft singles, can you really call that cheese? It's debatable. Maybe it's got a purpose, but I mean, those are like picky things. But it really has just like expanded my own culinary capacities, my own joy in being able to also host and make meals for people. And so much of that has been facilitated by Common Pantry in ways that I know some people, I think my housemate Elena just like reads cookbooks for fun. Maybe do you do that too, Hannah? A little bit here and there?
From time to time. Yeah. I maybe had a bad habit in high school of collecting cookbooks.
Beautiful. You know, and it's like that little fun, quirky thing, you know, for people who just like, oh, I want to like think about more things about food rather than me just like, oh, that's just going to be gets to be Hannah's thing. If I'm more regularly cooking meals with Hannah, I just get to learn from her expertise. And it just like the sharing of food facilitates a sharing of knowledge, a sharing of love of food. And it has significantly enriched my life, where like during COVID, we were all in quarantine and just like stuck with our housemates. And I'm like, I have like the world's spices, you know, at my hand, you know, and I just like, there's so many things we could be doing right now in the kitchen, even though we're all in, like on lockdown, like we're have more spices available to us than most kings throughout history. And it's pretty incredible.
For sure.
The other piece around like when you have guests over, you're talking about how that did you use the word generosity? Maybe.
I mean, for sure at some point.
Yeah. Just thinking about the way that that facilitates generosity for, in a way, sometimes I think like, oh, generosity. I know how much I gave to help this cause or this person. But there's a certain generosity that's where you're just not counting stuff. You're like, hey, we share food here. This pantry is now your pantry as you stay over here the next few days. And there's something really beautiful about that kind of what that facilitates, the kind of open-handed, open-heartedness.
Yeah. We have, as a house, have decided that any guest that stays less than 2 weeks, that they have no expectation to buy into our common pantry and can have access to anything that is that like what is ours is theirs. And like I think you can still be hospitable without having to have something like that for your guests when they come, but it's on so many levels that extra sort of like welcome, that extra, like the way that having a room set up and having a candle and like a gift or whatever it is, like making someone feel revered and treasured and honored, right? And man, there is something about going to a place and not the first thing you have to do is go get groceries, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that is luxury.
When I was first time I went to St. Louis for the Revoice conference, TJ and I stayed with now our dear friends Paulo and Bella, who were at that time a young Brazilian couple in seminary. And one of the first things they like welcomed us in, and then he like showed us the kitchen, and then he was like, "This is the fridge. This fridge is open to you. Open the fridge." You know, I was like, huh? He's like, open the fridge so that you know that it's yours and you can like go in and get whatever you need. And it was just it was really sweet and just really heartwarming.
Your house? Yeah.
You talked about how you've maybe thought about or maybe done different versions. Have you ever like dipped in, or I'm just thinking about common purse of like sharing finances. There's a way that common pantry is already doing that.
For sure.
Has.
Yeah, because Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, yeah, like, so you can do Common Pantry a lot of different ways. I learned in my stay as a guest that your house does Common Pantry very differently than we do. So, yeah, I'd say, like, the way that we do Common Pantry, which is to each month everyone pays into the pantry, and it's one person in the house's chore to do the shopping, and everyone kind of will put things on the list that they're wanting or that they're planning to use to cook for a meal. It really falls on the shoulder of that one person, sort of like carrying the responsibility of using and stewarding that money well. Mm. And just the notion of, I'm not going to hold control over this. You know, our common pantry is $190 a month. I'm not going to hold control and count my dollars. Yeah, $190 per person. I'm not going to hold control and count my dollars and say, I want this, I want my $190 to go to this, 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 and this. Right? Like, that's not how our common pantry works. And I would imagine that, like, letting go of some of that control is necessary for something like a common purse. Like, you have to be okay with things maybe not done exactly how you would do them, and trusting that if you want change to happen, that you can talk to somebody and that there is flexibility for that change to be incorporated. You know, maybe, again, goes back to the, you know, if someone told me, like, I only want organic produce for our house, I'd say, I don't know that we have a budget for that. Or, like, another thing that our house has kind of come to terms with is that Common Pantry is not for snacks. We do not buy snacks with Common Pantry. Mostly because you could blow your whole budget on snacks. So,
what have been some other variations that you've experienced with Common Pantry within your own home?
You know, so I did, like, a few versions of Common Pantry. Although I don't know if I would have thought about them as Common Pantry at the time. My first sort of, like, experience was when I did an internship over the summer here in Minneapolis while I was still in school in LA. And I stayed at a separate house from my sibling because I think my sibling didn't have space or, like, had roommates or I don't know. I lived with somebody else. But I literally shared all of my food with my sibling and would go over there and cook and eat with them, which is, you know, kind of, I guess, very non-traditional. But I loved it so much that the next semester in college, I tried to replicate it in this Christian doghouse with my best friend Bailey. And in all the ways that it seemingly shouldn't have worked with my sibling, it was, like, flip-flopped for what should seemingly work with a housemate I live with. Mm. And, you know, upon reflection, it ended up being a lot of different things that made it really difficult and made it, like, we mutually were like, this is not working. But then eventually I did move up to Minnesota permanently and lived with my sibling for a year and a half and did it again, this time actually living under the same roof. And it worked really, really well. And it was not super formalized. It wasn't like this, you know, shared bank account, which, you know, like, we have literally a debit card that is linked to a bank account for our common pantry. So it wasn't that formalized with my sibling, but yeah, we shared all of our food together and would cook and share kind of all of that and collectively work together to make sure that we're not eating out, because both my sibling and I share that value of being frugal in that way.
Have you done it where it's just, like, limited Common Pantry? Like, we just cover the staples, you know, like, rather than your full, like, you know, predominant grocery budget, $190 a month, it's, like, maybe about $20 of, you know, a month that you're pitching in to cover the basics.
So I haven't, although that is what Genesis more broadly did.
Okay.
Was they would cover, they had a very specific list of items they would cover. It was oil, flour, sugar, spices, coffee creamer, beans, rice, pasta, or I guess that was more like we do a common meal together on Thursday nights. So
with the beans and rice was as like a staple basic. Were there some people who then like mostly ate beans and rice to really say because they were able to, you know, just eat out of the commons and not have to procure their own food?
So I don't think anyone predominantly at Genesis lived off of what Genesis would pay for. Asterix and however, it ended up being something that people would use in their, like, once a month, you would be making a meal for the community that wasn't, yeah, like a larger meal. And you would maybe only get so much money to pay for it. Or things like potluck, right, where you're expected to bring food every week. It was, okay, if you really are in financial dire straits, you have something that you can make. So I think it was meant to be a fallback, but it ended up being a fallback that I never really saw anyone use, even people in dire financial straits. But I also think part of that is it's staples that I think are more readily leaned on in different parts of the world. So my house church makes beans and rice every Sunday. But prior to going to my house church, beans and rice was like not even on my radar as a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, my Genesis kind of had its roots in starting as a community house, like linked to my house church way, 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 way back. And so I think beans and rice as like this staple fallback food came from that culture. And so many people living here weren't from that culture. And yeah, I guess just never embraced the bare minimums. We'll pay for these things as a support system for people who can't afford groceries for any reason.
In the kind of, I don't know if it's like philosophy or the studies of the commons, a lot of economic theory modernly just says like, oh, the tragedy of the commons. You know, if there were free beans and rice available for everybody to use and everybody would just use it up and not be contributing sufficiently for it's like to be refilled, you know, it would get abused. And so everything should be privatized so that everyone just bears the responsibility exactly for what they, you know, for what they use. They have to give whatever they use and there's no kind of overburdening or mismanagement. And I'm curious, so in this case, it's like, do you think if that would have happened, that would have been seen as, like if someone was like, oh, I eat beans and rice for like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I, would that have been do you think that would have been viewed as an abuse of the commons? Or would that have been like, oh yeah, it's totally in your right to eat like a really basic meal three times?
You know, I don't know that it was ever sufficiently explained as to why we shared those things. And so I don't know. I don't know if the root in that was to provide for people struggling financially. I don't know if the root in that was to reduce food waste. I don't know if the root in that was to increase affordability or to promote commonality and sharing. I don't know, actually. And so I actually could imagine a very mixed response based in the lack of clarity in why it exists. Because if it were verbalized that this is a fallback so that no one in this community starves, right? Like, okay, then if you're eating beans and rice every meal, we're supporting that because that's the heart of why we're doing this, right? Which, you know, I think would be beautiful. And also, I think we live in a state where, you know, if you really are, like for the most part, if you really are struggling financially, that you're going to get some support when it comes to food. But also sometimes you're living under the burdens of debt, right? Like maybe you work a job that puts you over that threshold, and so you're not getting any support for food, and you also are barely making it by. So I don't know. To answer your question or to not answer it.
I think that speaks to part of what is really important in the commons. It is like an articulation of like purpose and an understanding of like, what is this resource? What is it for? Who is responsible for managing it? In your current situation, you said there's basically one person who is responsible for managing the common pantry, and everyone has a responsibility to financially contribute, and then one person's in charge of, and I guess financially contribute as well as voice their opinion or their desires for what it contains. And then there's one kind of person who pulls all that in to help accomplish that. Whereas, Hannah got to stay over at our community for a little bit. And we just have, actually right now, I'm like the primary grocery person. It's a very new thing. But for a lot of time, we've not had a primary grocery person. I still say primary. I'm not the sole. Anyone can go get groceries and put it on the Splitwise app. Love this app. It's so convenient for sharing as soon as you get beyond two people of splitting costs between stuff and where different people are spending it. It just makes the world easy. When everybody, actually even at times not contributing equally, you can set that up too of like, oh, I want to cover, more of this meal than other people. And the app is great. It's really flexible.
Yeah.
I forget where I was going. I got excited about Splitwise. But would you give anybody, like, in what situations do you think people shouldn't try to do Common Pantry?
Ooh. It's so funny that you should ask this, because I just had a conversation with a housemate who is planning to move out in the near future and do community on a smaller scale, maybe just a few roommates, and wants to continue Common Pantry. And, we had a dialogue about what could make Common Pantry successful on a smaller scale. And so I kind of sussed out what I think are the key things to sort out. And like I said, I had wild success with my sibling and a total failure with my best friend. We're still best friends. And I think it comes down to making sure that you are on the same page about your budget and what's feasible, that you are on the same page about your values, which goes down to really like what you're eating and how you're eating. Maybe even like go so far as to say that. And I say how you're eating. Are you somebody that eats at home a lot, or are you somebody that eats out all the time? Because if you're someone who eats out all the time, sharing groceries with someone who cooks every meal at home, that's a point of tension. And that's not even to say that it's not workable, but it becomes successively more of an uphill battle. And the more that there's conflict in any of those categories of budget or values, or I'm trying to think of another one of like what you want covered, right? Mm-hmm. Like, are you wanting to include pre-made foods? Are you wanting to include just the basics? Are you wanting to include snacks? I do mention snacks again, because it has been a point of discussion at many house meetings as to whether snacks should be included. Many different house meetings.
We've had definitely a variety of like, some people who snack more, some people who snack less. Sometimes a commenting of like, wait, do you have a dessert after every single meal? Oh, you do. Oh, okay. That's interesting. And I know, some of your housemates are heavy. Like, I feel like half their calorie intake is snacks, if not more than half in the day. But on the eating out piece, that's yeah, I've had people kind of opt out, not at this current community, but previously, like, oh, I don't want to do Common Pantry because I eat out so much. But because we do Common Pantry here, it motivates all of us to eat out less, which ends up being better for our budget, better for our health, and spending more time together. Because people are like, oh, they are thinking through that financial piece. If I'm contributing to this Common Pantry and the food at home's already paid for by me, why would I go eat out when I could be doing that? So it's been an interesting feedback loop when you do commit. But continue on. Yeah. Are those the barriers? You said that, so barriers of like, yeah, do you have the same values? Do you have the same financial expectations?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned like, oh, I'll make this assessment about eating out. I have a housemate who regularly makes trips to fast food because they just don't like, and we have food, right? We might even have leftovers on the leftover shelf, but I just need it, right? Mental health. I'm going. And so like, I really think like a huge component for Common Pantry success is flexibility, right? Mm. Of like, this housemate eats out a sizable amount and also eats in, right? Like not just eating out, but they're not sort of like vying for this is how much I'm eating or this is how much of the food I'm using. So I guess to go back a bit when I'd said that like right now we're doing it pretty flat. Everyone contributes the same amount. We had in the past done like heavy meat eaters would pay, I think it was like $25 more a month because, I mean, meat is expensive. And so, like, I think that's something to consider is, like, how much do you care about getting your money's worth? Because if you're really wanting fairness, and I say fairness because I would argue that what is fair is what is fair for the group. Mm. I'm definitely a collective mindset person rather than an individualist. But yeah, I think that if you're sweating the small stuff, it'll fail. If you're really picky, and I don't mean like, oh, I can't eat gluten or, oh, I can't have dairy. That's not picky, right? But like, oh, I only eat Kraft mac and cheese. Or, right, like, I only XYZ, right? And then it becomes really difficult because it becomes this list to manage of, you know, if you had a really long list of complicated allergens, that would be really hard to remember you can eat what I'm making you, or you can even eat the groceries that we're buying, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which I know that like food sensitivities is a big thing. So I think that could be really hard. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of who, I think was your question, who should do Common Pantry or what works?
Yeah, I think you answered it. Just like, yeah, what are the things that maybe I asked it of like who shouldn't do Common Pantry, but I think more so at the heart, it's, yeah, what are the potential obstacles that people need to consider? And I think those are all really important ones. And flexibility is such a huge piece of it. In some ways, I kind of laugh at anytime for a lot of different things about like, oh, intentional Christian community. People are like, oh, that's so weird. Are you a cult? What's going on? And it's like, you're sharing those things. And it's like, hey, you grew up in a family, like you with other people, and you shared stuff. Like, this is actually very basic to what it means to be human. It's just as we get older of doing that with other people who are adults, and it not just being there's, you know, one or two adults making all the decisions and everyone else mostly submits to it, but doing things collaboratively. And then single people are like, oh, I could never do that with somebody. And then they go get married and it's like, you're going to be doing it with somebody. So I don't give the people the hangups that people sometimes have. Aside from, I guess, the real recognition, there's an intimacy in it, right? When you start to say, oh, we're making even group financial decisions about the food and about what we're eating, and I'm having to share about how that makes me feel or what's difficult. And I think that's part of the joy and opportunity is that when you open up, even sometimes, you know, for some people it may feel really basic. For other people, you realize how vulnerable sharing about those things could be, and having other people like care for your needs as well, whether it's dietary restrictions or other difficulties, that means letting people in, letting other people like care and respond to what's going on. And that's where I've come more of like, oh, Common Pantry seems so vital to a community growing in like closeness and intimacy and love for one another, is having this daily saying, we're together, we're in this, we respect each other's needs, each other's wants, even though there's still, it's just like, wait, you do that thing that way? but you know, it's something right in the kitchen, but it causes us to grow and shift and be curious and be flexible. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that a huge barrier to Common Pantry is this notion of independence. And to have commonality is inherently to not be independent and to not have all of the decision-making power in your hands. And that can be scary. And that can also be maybe socially challenging, in that notions of independence come alongside notions of success. And I think that ultimately, until success can look like a support network and using your gifts and, you know, I guess to Christianize it, like build God's kingdom, then it's always going to be countercultural. And there's some people that's going to be hard for. And then there's some people who are just ready to try another way, to dive right in. And, you know, sometimes there's people in my house for whom I don't know that Common Pantry is like their bread and butter, but they do it and it works for them. And, you know, it's just a part of our house. And so that's a part of their experience. And mm-hmm. that's okay too. Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't, you don't have to be like Team Common Pantry to try it out or even for it to work for you. It can be in the same way that you try out different living situations of living with roommates, living on your own, living with a spouse, living with your family. It's just another way to think about food and to think about resources and sharing. Mm-hmm. We oftentimes think about like, oh, I share tools with my neighbor, or I share, I don't know, it's a good example, maybe even like sugar, right? Oh, my neighbor ran out of sugar. But yeah, just deepening the opportunities for, I don't know, owning less.
Well, I mean, and you know, you mentioned earlier, this has happened in other community houses I've been in, where you have to clean out the fridge and you're like, why do we have 7 ketchup bottles? And everybody having to own things independently does make you own more things. And it's messy, it's chaotic, it's wasteful. I would say, like, at the very least, if you're living with people, find those staples, you know, figure out whatever system you Splitwise to just get the staples like shared in your fridge so that you are not just having madness.
Yeah, I feel like a great example that I like, if I can make a plug on this episode, it is this. Share spices. Like, I can't tell you, like, even though we don't do individual spices, like we have an entire shelf just for spices, like giant, like built-in cabinets, multiple doors, shelf. And it's still bonkers out of control. And it's not like we have like 3 pepper containers and 3 oregano containers. We've just got the one of, but it's like the world, the spices. You go to different cultures. It's like, so at least share spices, people. It'll be, your food will taste fresher for it.
I have alphabetized our spices in the spice racks that Elena made. And she didn't think that we'd be able to maintain the alphabetic system and didn't think it was that important. And she is now so grateful because we can all actually find what's there, know what's there. When you're talking about moving from the independence to interdependence, the introduction to the book Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he talks about how in most of our kind of American or Western culture, we have this sense of, we move from dependence as an infant and child and into independence. And that's like success. And he's like, that's just the first step. You know, you used to have someone brush your teeth. Now you can brush your own teeth. Good job. Well, actually, maybe tooth brushing is not a great one. So I'm like, how do you move into the next step? You know, helping brush each
other's
teeth.
Tie your own
shoes? What was that?
Tie shoes for someone who can't?
Yeah. I mean, there is like, what if you're sick and you like, you do need help from somebody else? There's just going to be times where you need help from other people. And he's saying that growing from independence, where you know what you can contribute, into interdependence of saying, I can contribute this and I will receive support in these ways, is actually what maturity and flourishing looks like as humans. And so in that way, whether it's in Common Pantry or other ways that we move into interdependence, these ways of doing common life or partaking in the commons, I think is actually a maturity point. And when we, for just all of us as humans, and we have a, for a lot of people when they first move into community, and again, whatever the sharing thing may be, it's like, oh, this is, it's difficult. It's the same thing as it was in some ways difficult as a kid to move from dependence into independence. Like there's growing pains in that. There's learning new things. And growing from independence into interdependence is a new growing pains. It's a new set of variables you're not used to assessing and thinking through. But I do think it is, I've been more and more convicted that the kingdom of God happens in partnership. Jesus sent out disciples 2 and 2. He didn't just send out a bunch of individual disciples, and he's not even building a bunch of individual holy people. He's building a holy people, a holy community, and that is supposed to be the light of the world. And so I've been more and more just eager to lean into what are the practical ways that we, I think, can like mature and grow into the vision that God has for us as people. And again, my just like caveat against this bold vision is, things are complicated at times. You know, like there's times where, you have to be a little more independent. You share spices because Hannah told you to, but other than that, you keep everything independent because of health needs or other difficulties. And that's, reality. But
yeah, well, I think it is really true that in order for us to build something greater, we have to do it together, right? We have to harness other skills, talents, connections, strengths in order for us to move to change some of these larger things that these, whether it's like forces of darkness or even just as small as just like dysfunctional systems, we're doing it together, and that's how we're going to change things. Otherwise, it is just chaos. It's a lot of people doing things individually for themselves, and dog eat dog world.
And don't even get us started on just how capitalism individualizes us, and unless we start building collective power, we're not going to be able to build a sustainable future. That's why we need to do Common Pantry, to practice these skills right in our homes on the day-to-day.
But I guess something else I want to add to that is this idea. I think that a lot of people default to individuality and this mindset of really separation, like myself and others, keeping that separate, is that it kind of sidesteps the difficulty of conflict and of boundaries. That if I'm just so focused on who I am and my identity, I don't have to be concerned about where I stop and you begin, or where you stop and I begin, which is why I bring up conflict, of this idea that it forces us, when we step outside of ourselves, we are challenged by things that are different from us. We're challenged by mindsets, by experiences, by ideologies. And doing that together is kind of like a breeding ground for refinement, for really, and in many ways, getting to know yourself better, getting to know your strengths better, getting to know your weaknesses better. And I don't know, I guess it's like going back to just this plug for community that, you know, it maybe from the outside can look like this weird culty thing of sharing stuff, and they're kind of always a little bit of a mess because, you know, the reality is that people are a mess. But it feels like a thin place. It feels like you are getting to live out God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven, right? Like, we're not going to have this sense of individual, like, you know, like my own little house and my own like space and step away, get away, it's mine, not yours, right? Like, I guess not to get into theology of heaven, but
do.
There's something about togetherness that, why wait? Like, why does this life have to just be about me and my experience and myself? Mm. So, I don't know. All the times that I've felt God's spirit thickest has been in community and been around a culture of sharing and like oneness. Mm. And oneness outside of myself.
Mm. Mm. That's really, yeah. It reminds me of a quote that a friend just sent me of saying, like, our crown jewels in heaven, that, you know, the treasures we're building up, basically our relationships. It is that joy of people saying, oh, you were kind to me in, you know, this one way, and I'm so grateful. And even if you don't remember it, you know, like, it was really meaningful to me. And it's the joy of all these relationships and then the commonality. And that's what, that icon of Trinitarian hospitality through imaged in that Abraham's hospitality is just like God's inviting us to his table. And how can we be imaging that now and receiving that? I think I've talked about before, of just that very felt sense of belonging. Oh, I'm part of this. I belong here. And something literally so mundane, so daily, of just our basic needs of food can begin to, I think, just have pretty profound opportunities for growth and conflict management, experiences of oneness and love and joint mission. So many things. When I first shared with Elena that I was like, oh yeah, we're doing a podcast on Common Pantry, she's like, how are you going to talk for more than like 20 minutes on that? And here we are, just short of an hour.
Well, I mean, I don't know where we're at with like finishing things up, but one thing I feel like I have to add, please, that I feel like is maybe an essential component, at least to my house's Common Pantry success, is actually committed cooking for one another, which I know your house doesn't do and has found lots of success in that.
Yeah. We've had some seasons where we do it and... Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess just like for those who aren't familiar with what a cooking rotation might be or how cooking for each other can play out in community, our house has done it where you're having like a dedicated day of the week, and it's usually a weeknight, and it's been a few different iterations, but at least once every other week you're cooking for the whole house, which can be intimidating for people who just move in. Like, oh, I gotta cook for 9 to 10 people. But then, like, in the same way that there's economies of scale in sharing groceries, there's economies in scale of cooking too. Yeah. And let me tell you, the joy of even going from Common Pantry language, but Common Pantry with my sibling, or with two people, to Common Pantry with nine people and both involving cooking, not having to eat the same food over and over again is really nice. Also, wow, once every other week, maybe once a week cooking, also really nice. I can't tell you how nice it is to come home. And I'd say over 50% of the time there is hot food.
Wow.
It's so nice. And I do think it's something that does better with, like, might have hurdles with if you have too few people, having that sort of way of sharing cooking might be more difficult. But man, it's been a blessing. And yeah, I guess interesting too, in one of the other houses at Genesis, tried Common Pantry and it kind of didn't really work. And something I discovered with that is that they didn't do a cooking rotation. And so it made it hard of, like, really the only people that were cooking was the family. And so it just didn't, it was like, well, we are already going to share food as a family and cook as a family. So why are we doing this with everybody else?
I'll probably repeat this on any future episode that we continue to talk about things held in common, but there is no such thing as the tragedy of the commons. There's only the tragedy of the unmanaged commons. And so I hope, listeners, you enjoyed getting to meet Hannah. Maybe one day she'll jump in on another episode down the road. And I hope that...
We'll see, David.
Well, if you've listened this far into the Common Pantry episode, thank you for joining us. I hope you got to maybe eat some good food or think of the next recipe you want to try out and share with people. And that if you enjoy any of the conversations that we're having on this podcast, feel free to check out our Patreon, where we have a really invaluable group of patrons who support Communion Shalom continuing to go on. That's all for today. God bless y'all. Bye.